This is Digital Story Podcast number 1014, August 26, 2025. Today's theme is the Ricoh GR4, More Than Meets the Eye. I'm Derek Story. 1,496 seems like a lot to pay for a compact camera. That is, until you realize what everyone else will be charging for their products starting in September. So then we go to specs. Is this enough of an upgrade to warrant the price? I think it is, and we'll explain why in today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Before I started researching the Ricoh GR4, I was initially underwhelmed by its specs compared to the super popular GR3. But as I began to dig into the decisions that Ricoh made regarding the update, I found myself impressed by their willingness to listen to customers and address those requests. The GR4 is a very thoughtful camera, unique in its class, and refined with little touches that add up to a big upgrade. So I think the best way to illustrate that is to review its highlight features. Now, before I get into the features, I want to let you know I'm having to record today's podcast outside of the studio for reasons that I may explain at a later date. But at the moment, I'm outside of my cozy little studio, but I've been working on this show for a couple days, and I said, you know what, no matter where I am, I'm going to record this show, and then we'll all get a chance to think about this nifty little camera. Now, as I said in the opening, when you first look at the specs, you're probably going to go, really? We waited, how many years? 3 years for this? And then you start digging deeper, at least this is what happened to me, and you go, wow, okay, all right, okay. And I think one of the things that Ricoh's doing is not messing up what already works. And I know Fujifilm has worked really hard with the X100 series as well. When you have something that people already like, and in case of both of those cameras, already love, well, you don't want to muck that up. You don't want to lose that, but you do want to continue to polish the stone, right? To refine what you already have. And Ricoh has listened to their customers on the forums and so forth. And a lot of the things that I'm going to talk about right now really are a result of customer feedback. Now, some things are just outright improvements. Like, for instance, we'll start out with the new sensor. It's a APS-C, of course, BSI CMOS sensor. It's 25.7 megapixels, so you get a bit of a bump in resolution, but really that's not the story here. The real story is that combined with the new GR Engine 7 processor and this back illuminated design helps provide for cleaner image quality, better images, reduced noise, and then also a better performance overall, including with the auto-focusing. This sensor is paired with the GR Engine 7, and it creates a full-stop, better, low-light performance, along with a little bit faster startup time. And of course, you know, some other goodies too, a little bit of a ISO bump, and then you still get the same versatile 14-bit DNGs, and of course, those beautiful JPEGs that the GR is so known for. So again, it seems like a small thing, but what a nice refinement. You get a little bump in resolution, you get better performance, you get reduced noise, you get cleaner images, you get a stop, an extra ISO stop or so. Lovely stuff. And again, you just look at it and go, oh, well, they only went up to 25 megapixels, or really 26 megapixels. You know, Fujifilm just did 40. Well, you know, it's always a balancing act. Everything is connected. And when you're talking about a smaller camera and you're having to deal with noise in a smaller form factor, well, you know, heat creates noise. You know, there's all these things that we don't think about sometimes, we just sort of want what we want. And that's okay. That's all right. The designers have to go, well, we know what they want. Now we have to figure out how to do it. All right, let's keep going on this. That 28 f2.8 lens, well, that's been redesigned. So they redesigned that lens. I think they added a spherical element. What they really wanted to work on was a little better edge sharpness with that 28 millimeter equivalent. According to the reports that I've read, they achieved that. Now, they also did some other things too, including redesigning how that lens goes in and out of the body, right? Because when you turn on it, it comes out a little bit. And on the GR3, there had been some complaints that action, along with the design, actually sucked dust into the camera and then ultimately onto the sensor itself. Now, being a fixed lens camera, it's not like you can like take off the lens and clean off the sensor. You know, it's a closed system. So that dust problem, which did show up on user forums, has been addressed both by redesigning the lens mechanism itself and then additional coating onto the sensor so the dust doesn't stick to it. And we'll see how it pans out. But again, it's one of those little things. I don't know if it even shows up in the specs. It's one of those little things that really make a big difference when you're depending on this camera, when you're an enthusiast, and you don't want to be cleaning dust off your pictures. You just want to take your pictures and have this fast workflow. Now, a couple other things about this is they do have the integrated ND filter, two stops. And very few cameras have this. We know the X100 has it. I think my X100V is three stops, and they may have even upped it to four stops on the 6. But having that built-in ND filter, I just think is wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. And especially when you have a wide-angle lens already, the 28mm equivalent, and you want to soften that depth of field a bit, you want to keep it at f2.8 as much as you can, then that ND filter is going to help you in bright sunlight and things like that. And yes, you can use crop modes on this for both 35mm and 50mm. So the AF performance has been improved, according to them, and especially in low light focusing. This is a camera that is going to find itself in those kinds of situations, right? This is a camera you always have with you. This is a camera that street photographers use. Travel photography, all those situations, and low light is just part of the, you know, part of the deal when you're trying to capture an experience, when you're trying to be creative, when you're trying to be somewhat artistic. So having that better low light performance is really helpful, especially in those moments when you truly, truly need it. The image stabilization has been improved from 3-axis to 5-axis. So as a 6-stop shake reduction system. Again, talking about low light performance. Again, talking about a camera that you probably will never want to put on a tripod. Having this IBIS system that's very robust and improved, going from 3-axis to 5-axis is a pretty big deal. That is also part of the GR4. There's a new battery, and the new battery is more powerful. It's the DB120 battery. And larger capacity, they say it's good for approximately 250 shots compared to the 200 shots that we had in the GR3. One of the complaints or comments by users of the GR3, actually GR1, 2, and 3, is that it's not a battery for a full day's shoot. You know, you're compromising the camera a bit if you have to bring another battery, you know, just to get through the day. I don't know if this battery, this DB120, is going to do it or not, but you do go from 200 shots to 250. Well, 50 shots is a lot, you know, when you're at the end of the day and you still want to, you know, squeeze a few more clicks out. So we'll see how that works. Now, the USB-C port that's included with the camera does allow for in-camera battery charging. Along with data transfer, of course, too. So you might also be able to do a quick top off But if you have a USB-C cable, I think most of us do these days because all of our devices are USB-C now, then there's also the possibility for a top-off as well. Touchscreen hasn't really changed anything. 3-inch, fixed back, 1 million dot touchscreen LCD. You know, here's the thing. I really like tilting touchscreens. And one of my happy days was when Fujifilm added it to the X100 when I bought the V. That's why I bought that camera. I had wanted that camera for a long time, but I was really waiting for the tilting touchscreen. I understand not having it in this particular camera, and it's very rare that I say that, but the emphasis with this camera is to be as small as possible, and so every millimeter counts. And the fact is that if they would have done anything with that touchscreen to make it tilting or articulating in any way, then suddenly you're adding a whole new set of mechanics and thickness to the camera. They said, and this really came into play when we're going to talk about the flash here in a minute, Ricoh says, okay, you know, people are divided on whether we should include the flash or not in the camera, or we should tilt the LCD or not in the camera. But what everyone agrees on is that they want the camera as small as possible. Put yourself in the shoes of the engineer having to go, okay, you know, I would love to do some of these things, but my number one principle is to keep this camera small. And I think that's why we still have the touchscreen LCD that we do on this camera. Now, a big upgrade that happened, well, actually, there's an upgrade and then there's a trade-off that goes with the upgrade. The upgrade is now we get 53 gigabytes of built-in memory built into the camera. Boom. You don't have to have a memory card or anything for it. One of the trade-offs is, though, we go from an SD card to a micro SD card. A lot of people are going to go, oh, I hate micro SDs. They're so hard to finagle. You know, I need tweezers. You know, all those kinds of things. I totally get it. I have a micro SD card as my secondary card in the Nikon ZF. So I'm working with micro SDs, you know, a lot now these days. But here's the thing. You get 53 built-in gigabytes. So chances are very good that that is going to be enough for a day shoot or even a couple days shoot where you don't even need to mess with the micro SD card. And another thing that Ricoh has done in addition to that is they created a new iOS app, an Android app called GR World, built from the ground up for the GRs, including the 4. And what they're trying to do is make it easy through Bluetooth and Wi-Fi to go from your GR4 to your phone to publishing wherever you want or to go into your Lightroom mobile catalog, whatever you need, and not even be fooling around with the card. Now, a lot of people shoot JPEGs with this camera. They may shoot RAW plus JPEG or DNG plus JPEG, but the JPEGs are kind of the thing because of the film simulations, especially in the black and whites. If you're working with a JPEG workflow with this camera, you can flow those images, high-resolution images, from the camera to the phone or to the iPad to wherever you want to go. And that's a nice workflow, and you never have to worry about the card. So on one hand, yes, the downscaling of the SD card to micro SD, no one really likes those. But on the other hand, when you look at the big picture, adding 53 gigabytes of internal storage, I'm going, all right. Again, I see the thinking process here and I'm behind it. I'm really excited about 53 built-in gigabytes, especially if the workflow with the app works well. If that workflow works well, that is a really sweet situation. Let's get to that top hot shoe because another request has been to return back to the early days of the GR where you had a built-in flash. There's just really no room for it, given these other things that are going on. Remember, like things like five-axis image stabilization take up space. You're dealing with a crowded apartment here. You just can't bring a big old couch in there. The argument has been, it'd be really nice if it had the built-in flash like the X100. Well, look at the X100 and look at the GR4. Very different size cameras. So what they have done is, it's always had the hot shoe, so they have come up with a new flash, a cute little flash. I mean, it is small. It is so small that it will fit in the coin pocket of your Levi jeans, right? It's one of those things. That flash, called the GF2, I believe, super slim. It looks really cute on the camera. It has an auto mode and a manual mode. And what the auto mode does, it's not TTL, but you look at the hot shoe and there's all these contacts. The flash is talking to the camera and it's getting distance information, aperture, things like that. So it's an auto mode that should be quite good. It should be quite good, especially for fill flash situations. And I don't really think you need TTL in this particular case. I mean, you're not going to shoot a wedding with the GR4. Or if you are, wow, you've got more guts than me. I think that this cute little flash. Now, the bad news is it's an accessory. So it's $129 more on top of grand and a half that you're already spending. However, I would be inclined to get it. I use my little Olympus flash, my little clip-on Olympus flash that they used to give us with those cameras, and I love it. I just love it. When you're doing outside pictures of people, that little burst of light, that little fill flash is amazing on how much it improves those shots. So I would probably go ahead and get it. The hot shoe also supports other flashes as well, but you're probably not going to get one that talks to the camera as well as the GF2. The flash, by the way, has a guide number of 9.8 feet at ISO 100, has an internal lithium ion battery, and you recharge it via, guess what, USB-C. There's other goodies too. Snap priority mode is now has a position on the mode dial. Two new film simulations, and the film simulations are very good with this camera already, especially the black and white. I love the black and white film simulations for this camera as much as any camera I've ever shot with in the past. And I'm talking about the GR3 that I last tested. The new ones are Cinema Yellow and Cinema Green. And I was looking at the sample shots for these. Very cinematic. You know, you think Cinema Yellow, Cinema Green, you're thinking they're too heavy-handed. No, it's the kind of thing that works in the shadows, that sort of stuff. Very nice film simulations. They brought back the exposure compensation, the vertical exposure compensation on the right-hand side. They had left it off of the GR3. I think it was on the GR2. People loved it. For some reason, they omitted it from the GR3 as part of the redesign. People said, we want that. And so now it's back on the GR4, and I love it too. It's just a cool little plus-minus switch that makes it so easy to change exposure compensation. What else do we have here? I should touch on video recording. This is a photographer's camera, so it's not a video camera. We've got plenty of things for the content creators out there doing their TikToks. This is not for them, but it still shoots full HD, 1080p at 60 frames. So you do have a video when you need it. Now here's where we get to the thing about this camera. It weighs 9.2 ounces, including the battery and the media. That, of course, that micro SD card doesn't weigh very much, does it? So it's a 0.2 ounce bump from the GR3. But given the significant improvements in everything, sensor, lens, IBIS, battery performance, you know, all that kind of stuff, I'm willing to give them 0.2 ounces for that. So 9.2 ounces. It fits in your top shirt pocket and doesn't even make it sag. Just to kind of wrap this up here, I realize when folks first look at the listing for the GR4, there's going to be some sticker shock. Of course they are. It has gone up a lot since the GR3. However, I will say that the GR3, which originally came out, what, 3-4 years ago at $899, you can't get one for that price now. B&H and all those aren't selling them. And online, most of them are closer to $1,000 or $1,100. All right. So just kind of a little reality check here. This 9-ounce shirt pocketable camera with an APS-C sensor, sharp lens, excellent film simulations, fast focusing, 5-axis IBIS. I mean, this is literally an enthusiast camera that you can take anywhere, and probably the only camera of this quality that you can have with you all of the time. Its form factor is smaller than your iPhone. All right. So if you can have your iPhone with you all the time, then you can use the other pocket for the GR. One thing I would say about it, even though they have improved, allegedly, the dust getting into the camera with the new mechanism and the coating on the sensor, I would still keep it in a dust-free sleeve in my pocket. I just feel like, you know, the fewer opportunities there are for dust, the better off things will be. That's just one little addition I would make. I'm going to try to get my hands on one. I've already submitted a request for a review model. I'll keep you posted. It begins shipping on September 12th for $1,496.95. I have a link in the show notes for that camera. If you would use that link, if you're going to buy it, I would really appreciate it. Let's take care of a little camera industry news. This is interesting. YouTube is secretly editing users' videos without their consent. This is an article on Petapixel. I have a link in the show notes. Let's see what they have to say here. According to a report by the BBC, YouTube has secretly used AI to edit people's videos in recent months. The changes are reportedly small and often hard to spot without a side-by-side comparison. Wrinkles in clothes appear sharper, skin can look smoother or more textured, and ears sometimes warp. Some creators say that these edits give their work an artificial look that they never intended. Several YouTubers noticed the differences and raised concerns online. In one video with over 600,000 views, content creator Rhett Scholl showed the same video looked different on YouTube compared with Instagram. He says that YouTube Shorts version appeared smoothered and had an oil painting effect on his face. By the way, I hate that effect. If you overdo it on Zoom, face touch up, you get that same look. I did not consent to this, Scholl says. The most important thing I have as a YouTube creator is that you trust what I'm making, what I'm saying, and what I'm doing is truly me. Replacing or enhancing my work with some AI upscaling system not only erodes the trust with the audience, but also erodes my trust in YouTube. Scholl is not alone. According to the report, a Reddit post from June 27th entitled YouTube Shorts are almost certainly being AI upscaled shows screenshots of the same video at different resolutions to claim that details are being added or removed by AI. Other social media complaints by YouTube revealed how their videos were being automatically edited with AI. After months of speculation, YouTube has now confirmed that it's altering a limited number of videos on its Shorts platform. Quote, "We're running an experiment on select YouTube Shorts that uses traditional machine learning technology to unblur, denoise, and improve clarity in videos during processing, similar to what a modern smartphone does when you record a video," says Renee Ritchie, YouTube's head of editorial and creator liaison, writes on a post on X last week. YouTube is always working on ways to provide the best video quality and experience possible and will continue to take creator and viewer feedback into consideration as we iterate and improve on these features. YouTube did not respond to BBC's questions on whether creators will have the option to disable the edits. However, the news outlet pointed out that altering videos without informing users could undermine trust in what people see online. Do you think? Oh my gosh. So this is just one of those things where you go, oh really guys, come on. I mean, I understand YouTube wanting to do this, fine. But let's have it be some sort of option where the creator has some say in what happens to what they're creating. I would absolutely hate it if they gave me an overbaked Zoom face on my YouTube video when I'm trying to elicit trust when I'm talking about a camera review or something, and I'm totally, suddenly looking like plastic face. So I totally get these people's concerns. Hopefully this will get ironed out very soon. Here's a post from DP Review, and talk about dollars. You know, we're talking about dollars with the Ricoh GR4. Okay, buckle up for this one. Better still, Nikon updates and improves its most important zoom. And I have the link in the show notes for this. Nikon is updating one of Z Mount's core lenses just 6.5 years after the release of the current version, the Nikon Nikkor Z 24-70 f2.8 S Mark II. Will replace the company's flagship standard zoom and promises improved image quality and autofocus speed over an already impressive Mark I. The 24-70 f2.8 S2 features an internal zoom design, allowing it to be better weather sealed than the current version. The unchanged length of the new lens also allows its use on gimbals or video rigs without the need for rebalancing or reconfiguration. The new lens is 142 millimeters long, 16 millimeters longer than the existing lens in its retracted state, but 14 millimeters shorter when compared at the fully zoomed in positions. It uses a completely new optical design made up of 14 elements in 10 groups and including 3 aspherical elements and 2 ED elements. This compares with 17 elements in 15 groups with 2 aspherics and 4 ED elements in the older lens. This simplification helps make the lens lighter overall, 675 grams, 16% lighter than its predecessor. The new lens features 11 aperture blades rather than 9 for more consistently circular bokeh. Okay, so this is all very cool. Let's talk about dollars. The Nikkor Z 24-70 S2 will be available starting in mid-September and will retail for a recommended price of $2,799, excluding tax, $500 more than the original lens launched in 2019. Though it's worth considering, taking overall inflation into account, the Mark I's launch price would have been equivalent to over $2,900 in today's money. I don't know if I totally buy that formula. Anyway, whether I do or not is immaterial. $2,799 for this lens. And it's a beauty. I mean, I'm looking at this lens. I have the ZF. This lens would be nice on the ZF, especially for, you know, event photography and things like that. But I honestly, I'm just not at the point where I'm probably going to spend that on a lens that's 24-70. These days, if I'm going to spend big bucks on a lens, it's probably going to be for length, focal length, right? For things like Costa Rica, Safari West, those types of things. And probably not an everyday zoom. Like I have my 24-80 Nikon F lens, 3.5 to 4.5. All right, because of the high ISO performance of the ZF, I've been using that lens for events and it looks fantastic. So I already have it. And it was, I think I bought it used even. I think that lens cost me something like $350. And it's a beautiful lens. And the problem was when I didn't buy it, there's two versions. There's one that has optical image stabilization, one that doesn't. Mine doesn't, which means, of course, fewer things to go wrong. But all those years on, you know, DSLRs that didn't have built-in image stabilization, that was a little bit of an issue. ZF, not an issue at all because it has IBIS. You know, some things get better with time. That 24-80 is one of them. At any rate, $2,799, $2,800. It's a beautiful lens. I could buy the GR4, and then when they come out with the GR4X with the 40 millimeter, I could buy both of those. Same amount of money. Oh my. All right. You know, nimble photographers, they're so hard to deal with. Speaking of exotic glass, this is kind of cool. Why photographers like me obsess over the 200 millimeter F2, and you should too, as Sigma launches the first one ever for mirrorless cameras. And this is on digitalcameraworld.com. I have the link in the show notes. Let me read you what he says. I kind of like this essay. There are a few focal lengths in photography that carry the kind of mystique and magic that the 200 millimeter F2 does. It is a lens that lives in a world of its own. defying convention and offering something so distinct that once you've shot with it, nothing else quite compares. For many photographers, 200mm is just the far end of a trusty 70-200 f/2.8 zoom, a workhorse, reliable, and versatile. But a fixed 200mm f/2 prime is a different animal entirely, producing images with such separation and character that they almost feel otherworldly. It's not just another telephoto lens, it is a statement piece of glass. This guy's into it. I love his enthusiasm. Throughout my 2 decades as a professional sports photographer, the Nikon 200mm f2 was my constant companion and, frankly, my secret weapon. I leaned on it event after event because it offered something no other lens could. That wide-angle aperture pulled subjects forward in a way that made subjects leap from the frame while melting the background into buttery smoothness. Even in chaotic arenas with flashing lights and crowded backdrops, the lens could isolate a subject so cleanly it was as though I was carving them out with a scalpel. It's a lens I adored so much that at one point I owned not one but 3 Nikon 200mm f2 lenses. That might sound excessive, but when a piece of gear becomes an extension of how you see the world, it's hard to imagine being without it. While some photographers dream of fast super telephotos like a 400mm or 600mm, my obsession has always been with the 200mm f2. It wasn't just sharp, it has personality, a look that gave my images a signature style. When you're covering sports, where so many shots can start to feel similar, that kind of tool can set your work apart. Man, now I want one. This is why the arrival of the new Sigma 200mm f2 DG-OS sports lens feels so important. For years, Nikon and Canon shooters guarded their 200mm f2 primes like crown jewels. But now Sigma is democratizing that magic. In their sports lineup known for durability and cutting-edge optics, the 200mm f2 stands as a bold statement that such specialty lenses still have a place in today's market. It means that more photographers can experience this iconal focal length without having to scour the secondhand market for aging glass. In an age where zooms dominate and f1.2 primes steal the headlines, the 200mm f2 remains something quietly, definitely special. It is not a lens for everyone, nor should it be. It is for those who want to create images with a look that cannot be replicated by stacking features or megapixels. To me, it will always be the lens that gave me my voice as a photographer, and I'm glad to see its legacy live on through Sigma. Some tools transcend trends, and the 200mm f2 is one of them. Okay, wow. All right, so this lens is $3,299. Expected availability on September 5th. 2 lens mounts, either the L mount or the Sony E mount. And I'm looking at the lens right now. Ooh, it's pretty. It is pretty. Again, if I was in that line of work, you know, this essay alone may have convinced me that I need this lens. I would love just to play with one for a day. Unfortunately, right now, we don't have it in my Nikon Z mount, but we'll see. A lot of times Sigma will start out with L mount and Sony and then give us one in the Nikon version too. So I'll stand by, not that I could buy it. Now we've gone from 2 GR4s to what, 3 GR4s. So I have a whole pocket full of GR4s instead. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. Big thanks to our Inner Circle Bold members. These are the folks that support our community month in and month out, have their own space on Derek's Story Online, get discounts for workshops both online and in person, and just really give this community a real sense of personality and humanity. You know, when we move from just like a one-way sort of situation, and I mean me talking into a microphone and you listening, that's great. We all love podcasts. We all listen to them. But when we go beyond that, as we've done with the Inner Circle, where not only am I talking into a microphone, but then you're typing onto a web page, and then other people are responding to that. And then suddenly we have this interaction swirling around, sometimes based on something that I said during the podcast. Sometimes it's a photo assignment that we do every month. Sometimes it's someone's just said, hey, I just got this new thing and I love it, or I'm thinking about buying this. What do you think? That is a whole different level of interaction. Just like you could watch a YouTube video on how to do something, or if you're part of an online workshop where you're interacting with the host and with the other participants, you have a whole different experience. This is what Inner Circle does for our community. They bring that full-bodied experience. If you want to learn more about it, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can nose around a bit, sign up, and then you'll be hearing from me, and I'll get you situated on one of the coolest photography groups I think there is in the world. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. And finally, I'd like to thank our friends at Red River Paper, longest-running sponsor of the Digital Story. In a lot of ways, when you talk about companies that have personality and more interaction than other companies, like a one-way company for most of us would be someone like Canon or Nikon. They send us the stuff and that's it, or they make it available and we buy it. But Red River Paper is so much more dynamic than that, because people aren't as comfortable printing as they are taking a picture. Maybe that's one of the things that has spurred that interaction. But they're a company that you can interact with. They're a company that provides all sorts of resources. They're a company that supports their product in such a circular way. It's really quite amazing. I mean, they truly have personality, and their paper is truly exceptional. And I'm just so happy to have them part of our Digital Story family. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can click on there. Make sure you get that coupon code for free shipping. Nose around a bit. Order some paper and make some beautiful artwork. Compliments of Red River Paper, and a big thanks to them for supporting this show. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed our podcast. I'm working on more cool stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.